Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get Shungite to the masses. You are entering the Shungite Zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Hagishat Radio. And welcome to the Shungite Show. It's December 11th, 2018. My name is Nancy Hopkins. This is a production of Cosmic Reality Radio. I'm very excited today because we have Kevin Smith back on with us, and I'm just going to say, hi, Kevin, how you doing?
Hello, hello, how are you, Nancy?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really great now that we're up to, everything looks like we're projecting over the airways and we're together again, and I'm just excited about, just hearing your voice.
It's great to be back.
Okay, now, as far as most of you... some of you that follow the show will remember Kevin. He's the Renaissance man. He goes to different Renaissance fairs, and I don't actually know what you do when you're at the Renaissance fairs, but we'll get to that. But what happened was that he also was participating in the Shungite Honey website with Derek Condit, and Derek runs a monthly giveaway, and so. I don't even know how he figures out who's the winner. But the winner was not Kevin, even though Kevin had, was participating. And so Derek kept looking at this guy's name and going, so he made two giveaways that month. And it was one of the most brilliant things that Derek has done, because the next thing we get from Kevin is his introduction to Shungite Honey. He did a live video on Facebook, and I gotta tell you, Kevin, it was just an amazing thing to see your face when you first tasted that honey. It was just awesome, and he's been a loyal fan of ours, and he contributes, and he's just got such an exciting life. So how do you want to start this? First off, let's just give people, from your standpoint, what your life is like. What are you doing? Just a brief bio of the things that you want to share with the people. Is that okay?
All right. Yeah, that's perfectly fine. So, quick rundown. Back in 2011, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I was a not quite high functioning vegetable for a while. And through change of diet and lifestyle and mindset, and with the help of my wife, I was able to make a substantial recovery. I'm not saying that I'm, quote, cured, but I'm doing a lot better than most other people that I talk to or know that also, are afflicted with this condition. But for, the last 15 years now, this last show that I did in October, November was in Carolina. And that marked the end of, the total completion of 14 years being with the Renaissance Festivals. My first show was in 2004 at the October, November in the Texas Renaissance Festival, which I no longer work at. But I've been traveling across the country and, had little breaks here and there, but for the most part, on with the Renaissance Festival for the last 15 years. And I've done a whole smorgasbord of different jobs and titles and responsibilities. So,
Can you give me an example of, what are you doing now?
So what I am doing now is I'm going to be going to Arizona, and I am working at a shop. I'm managing a shop called Oakshire Oddities Magical Menagerie. And it's a bunch of whimsical, fantastic art of different creatures. And you know, it's one of those trade secrets on how they're produced, because they get one, on the one hand, they're totally whimsical and cartoonish, but on the other, they're also very, you know, have a lifelike quality and a personality, and they're, you know, fairly high end. You know, we try and have it all pay grade available, but then, you know, we have some of the larger pieces, we have, you know, wow, that's like a $700 piece. And so I'm selling fine art at the Arizona Festival, and then I'll go to Georgia and I'm working at the intuitive reading booth where I'm reading tarot cards, doing my Black Mirror scrying, doing palm reading, and past life regression work.
Now, how did you happen to get involved in this Renaissance Fairs?
In the Renaissance Fairs, I got involved in the Renaissance Fairs through an art form known as contact juggling. It is, did you ever see the movie called The Labyrinth?
No.
Okay. well, there's this character who's the Goblin King, and when he is sitting there near the beginning of the movie, he's interacting with, a mortal. And he does this thing with a crystal ball where he's rolling it over and around his hands. And it looks just entirely out of this world. It's one of those types of art forms that when you first look at it, you're like, this should not be a thing and possible. And it's amazing flow art. So, you know, I started juggling when I was six, doing regular tossing things, juggling. And then in 2000, I started with the contact juggling when that art form was still fresh. You know, not a lot of people knew about it, and still not a lot of people know about it, but it was really, you know, new and groovy, and nobody knew about it, and it was fantastic. And so when I was going to the Renaissance Festival, just because, hey, you know, going to the Ren Fair, that's great. There was a tent there, a business called Try Out Toys, which I do not believe is in existence any longer. They've moved on to other thing like laser engraved chocolate, but they're still good friends of mine. But so they were having this thing where they were going and teaching people how to do flow arts, and they called it sphere play. And, you know, just to market it and trademark it as their own. And so I was just so blown away, like, yes, other people that are doing this amazing art form. And so I played with them, and you know, one, they teach lessons and have people come in like, hey, let's come in for a free lesson and I'll show you how to do it. And then you get people who fall in love with it. And then they have spheres that they go, you know, the different acrylic balls and metal balls that they go and sell. And so I was hooked, and I was teaching lessons because I really was obsessed with this art form for many years.
And, so you're saying that it's just taking a ball and moving it around your hands so that it looks like it's alive and levitating and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I can get a YouTube video for you, you know, on our break or something, because it is mesmerizing when it's being done well. And there's two forms. One is where you're rolling around the arms and hands and body and all of that. The other is what's called palm spinning, and it's like the Chinese Bao Ding balls, where you have the two balls that you just spin in a circle in your palm. It's that kind of concept, but doing it with more spheres, and then actually turning that into an art form.
Now, where did this originate from?
So there is a juggler by the name of Michael Motion, who first pioneered this. And you know, different jugglers have, like Bobby May did elements of contact juggling. He was a classic toss juggler from the 20th century. But you know, many jugglers have gone and incorporated this as a concept, but actually getting it as a cohesive whole concept unto itself, and not just something that you do while you're also doing regular toss juggling, or, you know, in between, but actually making it into a big art form. Michael Motion was the one who really pioneered it and brought it to the fore. And he called it dynamic manipulation, was his the term that he coined for it. And so what I asked you about the movie The Labyrinth, where, you know, David Bowie plays the Goblin King, when he does this thing with the contact drilling with the crystal ball, that's actually Michael Motion, who, you know, played the Goblin King's hands for him, because David Bowie couldn't do this. And so it was Michael Motion who went and really pioneered it. And then really as of the very late 90s, like 98, 99, all up into the first decade of the 2000s, it was an eclectic, exclusive group of contact jugglers on the internet at contactjuggling.org. And over in the UK, they had Ryan Mellors and others, and Drew, they formed what's called the Ministry of Manipulation. And, you know, so you got these different enclaves, and then they had the International Contact Juggling Festival. And, you know, like 20 people show up or 30 people show up. It was, you know, kind of funny, but it was really an intimate thing because you knew so many of the people.
Oh, wow. It's, So that led you, that made you connect with the Renaissance people, and then you actually began to participate in the Renaissance fairs, helping them or doing your thing then?
Yeah, I worked with the House of Play, the contact juggling, the sphere play for a few years. And then, you know, they weren't at every festival that I was at, so I eventually went and got a job doing, you know, retail sales and just being a hawker, saying, you know, hey, come get your dragon puppets, or selling chocolate and just standing on a little stool and yelling at the crowd, telling them to come get chocolate and that kind of thing.
You know, I realize that you and I both know what a Renaissance fair is. I was, oh my gosh, the first one I went to, it was just, you know, always your first introduction to something is always a little more magical. And it was like, right. Oh wow, this is so awesome. Because guys, when you see what this is, it's like you're back in time. You know, you're in the medieval times, you've got all these knights walking around, there's a king, and the food is weird. The food is very weird.
Yeah.
But it just, and the, you see there, art and, merchandise that you don't see other places.
Yeah. It used to be really historically accurate. Like you had to always dress in period accurate attire and have the right shoes and the right stitching on your clothes. And they were like really, you know, butthole retentive about that. But over the past decade and a half, they have loosened that up a little bit. And so now they've made they gave themselves a little breathing room by calling it the Renaissance and Fantasy Festival. And so you have fairies, you have pirates, which weren't really, you know, the pirates, you know, when you think of a pirate with a swashbuckler and all that, they weren't around in the Renaissance, but they are at the Renaissance Festival. And, you know, fairies and other magical creatures. And then you get the occasional stormtrooper or somebody, you know, dresses up like they're from Star Trek and shows up. It's really a glorious freak show.
I love that. I do. Okay, now, the Renaissance fairs, is it, I know they're all over the place. Is it one organization that is coordinating all of these fairs, or do you have little local chapters that are fairly independent that just set them up? How does that work?
So most Renaissance festivals are actually businesses, and they have their own business structure. So the festival in Arizona, the Arizona Renaissance Festival, as it's called, it's very original. It is also owned by a gentleman named Jeffrey Siegel, who also owns the festival in North Carolina. So those are the same owner and the same management and all of that. So, but the rest of them are pretty, I mean, a lot of them are owned by different people. So the one up in Minnesota that I do is owned by Mid-America Festivals, Inc., I believe. And so, you know, you get different business owners that own different locations, and some of them are owned in common by different organizations, and the board owns it and manages, and yeah.
So how many of them are they in all the states, or how many do they have on a nationwide basis?
I don't actually know how many there are nationwide. I know that in Texas, which is where I started, there's the Texas Renaissance Festival. There's the Scarborough Renaissance Festival. There was the Four Winds Renaissance Festival out near Troop, Texas. I think that one may be closing. I'm not certain. I haven't been there in many, many years. Yeah, and then there's one that's over near Austin. There's one that a couple of years ago they were starting to do down in South Texas, but then a bunch of stuff happened and it didn't end up getting off the ground. So, like in Texas, there's probably 8, I would say, different festivals. And in New York, there's at least 3 festivals. In North Carolina, there's a couple. Yeah, so I mean, there's well over 100.
And do you know if there's any international kind of Renaissance fairs? Have you ever heard of anything like that?
So like in Norway, they have over in the city of Hamar, they have what's called Middelalderfestivalen, which is the Middle Ages festival, and it's one of those things that you get such a collection of different artists who, you know, don't just have a shop somewhere. They're actually going to festivals and show, you know, pitching their wares. And, you know, you have the joust and you have the jugglers and the different shows and the music and all of that. In Norway, well, you know, Norway is a really old land. And so it feels more authentic, I feel. Hello, Nancy. Are you muted?
Oh, Kevin. Okay, I'm so sorry. Derek called in, and I unconsciously clicked on it, and I dropped you. Yes, because I said, because I wanted Derek, you know, I asked Derek if he wanted to join us at the beginning of the show just to say hi to you, and apparently he does. But let's just take a couple of minutes and just go back to the Norway thing, because I didn't, that's when it happened, when you were talking about Norway and how it was an old country.
Yeah, it's an old country and an old land, you know, even before it was Norway, and it was still owned by Sweden and Denmark, and they just kind of tossed it back and forth. Before Norway got their sovereignty, but it, you know, it goes way, way, way back. It's an old. There are buildings in that country that are older than America. So, you know, so it's just the time scale and all that. So what it gives, it requires less of the willful suspension of disbelief when you're going to that festival, is what I was saying.
Okay, so, yeah, because we have them in Florida, but it's like one a year. You know, that's all we hear is one a year. All right, so let me bring in Derek here, because he's the guy that made all this possible. And he normally would be here, but he's so busy that we've actually we just don't have time for. Okay, so what happened? To call. Derek. Okay. He should be coming up now. All righty.
Awesome.
Yeah. I hope he's coming up. Can he hear me calling? Skype has been very weird lately.
Yeah. No, it sounded like there was a waterfall kind of noise.
Okay, Derek, I think is here. Yes, Derek. Hi.
I am here, and I'm excited that Kevin's here as well. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Derek.
Hi, Kevin.
You guys chat for a minute, because Derek, tell the people what happened that you. I already told them that you were having the contest, and you just had this feeling about Derek in the honey, but if you would like to ask any questions of Derek, Kevin, regarding the honey or, anything, but you guys carry on a little conversation here. We've been talking about Renaissance. We haven't gotten into the Black Mirror scrying or any of the really, really, really good stuff.
Great. Yeah, I just turned on the radio station. I said, so he is there. He made it kind of thing. I was hearing a little bit about the Renaissance Fair, and I grew up going to those as a kid in California and the nearby other states, be it Arizona.
Oh, yeah,
they're a blast. So I didn't get to hear much of what you said, but I will replay it. But those are fascinating. I always had a great time.
Which one in California were you going to?
When I was going to community college, it was San Luis Obispo. So it was actually right across the street from Cuesta College in San Luis. So I don't know the name of it.
Southern SoCal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, basically.
Yeah.
It would move around. But yeah, that was it. So yeah, they'd come there and they'd set up for, 3-4 days or something like that. And then you'd go there and get to interact with everybody. And just, it was so cool to experience. It was a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's had my attention for, 15 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Yeah, that's interesting. And then, I know Nancy said we haven't gotten into the mirror or anything yet. And I don't know if you had any questions on the honey or not, but you were one of the Shanghai Honey gift pack giveaway winners a few months ago, I think, too.
Over the summer.
Yeah. So you've tried the honey, I'm guessing, and so that's interesting.
I have, and I'm still using the chapstick, and I burned the candle at the memorial for a friend from the Renaissance Festivals who tragically died this summer.
And oh, okay.
Unexpected, and yeah. And so across the country, everybody that knew her and loved her, we all stood vigil. And just made that moment, and I was like, man, I need a candle, and what do you know? This seems like that candle seemed the right one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm terrible that happened. I'll have to get you, we did stop making the candles, just kind of a time issue there for me, but they are pretty popular, and they're neat how they kind of spark when you light them sometimes too, when the Shanghai honey ignites.
Yeah,
they were kind of interesting. Do you actually perform back to the Renaissance? Do you, are you a performer there? Do you actually, take part in the setting up and all of that as well? Maybe I missed that at the beginning.
I got into the Renaissance festivals with contact juggling, an art form that has this weird mystical, flowy type look to it. And I'm going to be sharing a YouTube video so people can get an idea of what I'm talking about. But I got on with that. And then I've done retail, and now I'm a manager for a couple of different shops, in Arizona and Minnesota. And then in Georgia, I work at an intuitive reading booth where I am reading tarot cards for people and doing the Black Mirrors crying and doing panda analysis.
Oh, that's fascinating. We'll have to definitely get your schedule and see where you're at, because it sounds like it's, you know, it's all over the place. So that's interesting. Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Are you still doing the Texas ones, Kevin?
I am not.
Because he's got family in Texas.
Well, I may have to actually come down, because I'll be going through California this year and Arizona, and probably a couple times maybe. So, yeah, that'd be, I'll have to check out that schedule and see what's going on.
Yeah, Arizona's the next festival that I will be doing. It starts in February. I can look on my schedule real quick.
That's actually pretty good timing, because I was just, I think I talked to Nancy a little bit about it the other day, but there's something called a powwow in Arizona around that time frame. It's a, you may know about it, it's a large rock and gem show that's gone on for decades.
Yes.
Quartzsite.
Yeah, I got friends that have a shop set up or a stand set up in Quartzsite. And then there's also the gem and mineral show that's south of Phoenix over in, the name is escaping at the moment.
Tucson,
yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my dad and I grew up doing the Quartzsite one, and he still has tables there and whatnot as well. So that's interesting. Yeah. That's,
nice.
I have to try and make it this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just looked at my schedule, and Arizona Festival, Renaissance Festival, opens on the 9th of February.
February, okay. Okay, it probably runs like a week or something?
It runs for 8 weekends.
Oh, okay.
So it's the last day of... The last day in Arizona is on the 31st of March.
Okay, interesting. Okay, that's a good time frame there too. That, and that, I'll be in that area, and that's a long time frame. That's nice, huh?
Yeah. So it's Saturday and Sunday. We're also open on President's Day, which is February 18th.
Now, when you say the weekend, so you're only working on the weekends, but you're there for the entire 8 weeks.
The festival is only open to patrons on Saturdays and Sundays, but you know, we do art production. We do, you know, I do my hypnotherapy practice during the week. And some people only work on the weekends, but the majority of people are working, you know, all the way around the clock.
And you just bring your own tent and set up with your cat. What's your cat's name?
My cat's name is Morrigan.
Morrigan?
Morrigan.
And she's a female, right?
She's a female. She is now a 15 and a half year old. She is a dwarf cat. She's you know, 15, over 15 years old, and she still looks like a kitten.
Wow.
And how long has she been traveling with you? The whole time she's been with you?
The vast majority of the time. And, you know, when I go out of the country, then I leave her with my parents because they love her too. And then, but she travels with me the majority of the time.
Where do you go out of country?
I go to Norway.
Oh, okay. Do you have, is it a family link, or is it just that you really love the country?
I have in-laws and I have friends, because I did end up living there for almost 2 years. And so I have connections to the country.
Very
and
awesome.
I got my, you know, nieces and nephews-in-law and yeah.
And you have a wife. I didn't even realize you were married. That's very nice. And how long have you been married?
We were married on March 14th of 2011. So, what, over 7 years now? Almost 8 years.
Wow. Cool. So, do you have any questions for Derek? Derek, do you have any questions for Kevin? Or shall we proceed? Kevin's got a list. Of course, now I've brought Derek in, so we don't have the same message chat up. You'll have
I do have a question for Derek. It's just an idle curiosity thing that I've been wondering about. Because I've seen the map that shows a bunch of the different people that are doing the Shungite beehives around the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, because I had asked, I think, on the group about, hey, have you heard the similar feedback from these other people? And you were saying, you know, in general, it seemed to be affirmative. And I'm wondering if you have talked with them about getting other Shungite beehive people on the show or going and incorporating them into the presentation of it. So that people say, oh man, and there's this guy over in Lithuania or wherever that's also, wow, you know.
Sure. No, that's a good question. And yet that map you're talking about, for those that haven't seen it, we have it in a few spots. It's basically a global map laid out flat, and there's a bunch of little red, either red push pins or flags. There's a couple of versions of the image. And they're all legitimate spots. And as a matter of fact, they've probably doubled since I've even made the image. So all nice. The little red flags. Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. So those are legit. Excuse me. I know it's hard to tell what country they're stuck in sometimes. And even I forget, because I go through my emails and list and see who I've communicated with or I'm talking to currently. But anyway, I have, and that's a good idea. So I will, and I'm actually lining up today, as a matter of fact, to travel again down to California this year and meet not only a couple of Shungite beekeepers that are doing the same thing, because they want to, you know, have me take a look at their stuff and see what's going on there, but then also a commercial beekeeper that just kind of came into the picture recently.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that is really cool. And he has 1,500 plus hives. So we're gonna start right off the bat with 300 of his nooks, his starter hives, and get some nuggets in there. And again, that's kind of why I missed the beginning of the show as well. I'm just shuffling things around and getting ready and trying to make that happen. So we will, and there are people that are interested in talking. At this point, it's tough either because in this case it's a huge beekeeper and it's so many beehives and it's a time situation, or they're so new there's not results. So there's not too much to talk about yet. But the other thing I'm kind of running into with the beekeepers is they're doing, often it'd be an example of, say, they have 6 or 10 hives where they're doing maybe one of them right there in the middle. So it's difficult for them to see. They'll see the differences in the bees and as far as the bees attracted the nuggets, because that's clear, as you can tell from the video. But what they're doing is maybe they're treating their hives still. So the closer hives nearby, they're still using chemicals on. And if you're that close, chemicals and bees migrate. They move over. They get around. So I'm just trying to convince them to, you know, just take some time off and maybe don't treat or separate the hives a little bit and see. But all in all, it's going to be good feedback either way, so that we'll see just how some really chemically treated hives, you know, or respond with the really organic, clean, non-chemically treated hive kind of in the mix there. So it's kind of a mix. It's hard to say, well, this person at this location is all Shungite, this, that, and the other. Well, we're trying to get them. Some are doing stages, maybe trying the rock, so they haven't necessarily Shungite painted yet. Some have Shungite painted. But no, that's a great idea, and maybe I'll get a couple few together, and maybe we'll have a small online chat and webinar and just discuss it. Maybe put that in the forum so everybody can take part.
When he said the forum, he means the ShungiteBeehives.com website. There's a forum, and anybody that's interested in the Shungite bees should go there. You just sign up as a member, and then you can go and you can ask questions and you can get answers. And we prefer people to go there to ask the questions so that we've got one place where people can find the information. The problem is that just coordinating. I mean, like Derek himself, when I first met Derek, and he was already a couple of weeks, 3 or 4 weeks into the first Shungite project, I said to him, Why didn't you contact us? Because he had heard me asking for beekeepers, that I thought that we could help the bees. But he just bought the nuggets, didn't say anything, and did it himself. And so we don't know how far reaching it really has gone, because it was a set of circumstances where we met Derek. You know, it wasn't like he introduced himself, or, you know, it was like, oh, there's this guy that's doing, you know, and all of a sudden we're talking to Derek Condit, who is, you know, just the B guy. So we don't know. We don't know, but we, you know, that's one of the things we're trying to do, is to get people to come together on the forum so that we do have a better perspective on what's happening worldwide. I'm done.
Yeah, it's like she was saying, it has been kind of difficult to get feedback sometimes, and because some of us are just, you know, so independent that, oh, heck, I can do that, and we get so worked up in what we're doing that, you know, maybe we don't reach back out when we should. So I understand that. So I'm trying to reach out to some of the beekeepers that have already asked for nuggets. And in fact, my sister's even one of them in the state of Oregon, but she's just too nervous to get on the radio or something like that. But I can get the feedback and relay it. So it's more that, again, the whole hesitation of somebody getting on the radio, that's a, their eyes open up real wide and get nervous. And so that's usually a push back pretty quickly. But, the feedback I do get is good, and we've gotten it from, as Nancy mentioned, something about Texas earlier, we have some feedback from there and Tennessee now, various medium-sized beekeepers who have used the shungite. So I'm talking, I don't know, maybe 100 or 200 hives. So not thousands, but, you know, so decent sized beekeepers are doing it, and they're having good results. What they've done is, because they're a little bit larger, they can take one of their apiaries or beehive, you know, collections where they have a bunch of beehives, and keep those shungite rather than a mixture or too close to the chemically treated ones. And those results are really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's cool there that they're doing that and they're getting results, and they don't have the losses either. Varying degrees on things like American foul brood, because it depends, it's relative to weather. So when I say American foul brood, I'm basically talking about, think of fungus in a beehive or mold or something. It's a disease that the bees can get, that it's a circulation or ventilation issue with the beehives. So as I teach them, you know, take care of this problem, because shungite's not going to exactly evaporate all the water out of the beehive, sort of thing. That's a different problem. So if I can teach them and guide them a little bit on that, perhaps spraying the inside of the beehive with a colloidal silver water mixture first, and that'll inhibit, you know, the bacterial growth and whatnot in the fungus. So that can take care of that part, letting shungite do its job, which takes care of on so many other levels. So it's a combination type thing. But it is really good results so far. It's no one has reached out and said, hey, these magic black rocks haven't done anything, and pitched them off in the field, which would be good anyway, because then the field would benefit. Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah. So it's a win-win no matter what. Once the shungites leave this location, I'm happy regardless, because they're going to another spot. And I know something's going to benefit from it. So I'm just glad that people like you are still interested. And I do still see posts and receive questions on them. And it is growing. So we're looking to expand some conversations and talks this year to what I've learned are called master gardeners. That's just a new term and title for me, understanding that when I've spoken to a couple, it's just fascinating how they go the no chemical route. It's really neat to see that there's lots of people out there doing it, coming at this from different aspects. So like I'm coming from the bees and they're looking from the land, and I don't
think
that's
biodiversity and all that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think I even mentioned this to Nancy yet, but yesterday, I'm gonna leave some names off the air because I don't know that I can say it yet. Okay. There's some individuals that travel the United States healing our waters. So, and again, we really wish I could say the names, but they're pretty famous on Facebook. And they travel around to different Native American tribes throughout the U.S. and they heal in the waters with various, how would I term that? There's various, gatherings they're having, I guess we'll say. And there's, they're using devices such as copper buckets or whatnot. There's ceremonies that happen. And again, there's many, many people involved for this, depending on the location. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I was contacted yesterday. They're going to integrate some of our shungite into the ceremony and start spreading that. So it's a whole healing the waters across. And it's just, they're doing the United States now because that's where we happen to be. But clearly it's about the whole world. and then moving it from there. And we'll get more information and get it online on cosmicreality.net. So I'm talking to everybody out the radio world too. So I'm sorry for being so vague here, but we will get the information so you can at least follow online and see more of what's happening. And again, I'll get more details so you actually know who and what I'm talking about. But it's fascinating that there's, and these are big groups of people doing this and learning about Shungi and integrating it into what they're doing, much as yourself with your mirror that we really vaguely touched on. So I'm really interested in hearing from you on that when Nancy's, you know, ready to talk about that.
Well, the one thing I want to ask, sorry, I interrupted you. Mm-hmm. Kevin, have you heard what happened this year with the apiary, Derek's apiary, the Shungi apiary in Washington State? Because this year, of course, he came over to Cosmic Reality and you know, basically took over the operation. And, oh, hold on. I got to answer this. Okay, Derek, keep talking.
Okay, no problem. So I was wondering what that bell was all about. I was like, okay. I thought she had a soundboard now. I think we're talking about, I'm not sure exactly which aspect she's talking about yet, but she'll be right back. But, we're talking about the apiary here in Washington State. So, and actually we're doing a crowdfunding on Indiegogo right now for just one more day where we're hoping to get some crowdfunding and supporters so we can, you know, help spread Shungi out to various beekeepers and get some more traveling.
Mm-hmm. How much has that gotten now?
We're probably sitting around 18% fulfilled and we have about a day left. Not everybody has, you know, money. I understand that. So even, and that's okay because just their thoughts and, just the love that I know people send out is appreciated.
And it raises an awareness. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a win-win no matter what, because I've been contacted by people, you know, they couldn't necessarily donate anything. That's not a problem. Call and talk to me, ask me, I'll send you some free information so you can share with other beekeepers. And that's what I'm hoping to do. So that's the whole goal. And then, of course, expand this apiary in Washington, as Nancy was mentioning, where we've finished another year with no losses from colony collapse disorder at all.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really awesome. And every single beehive colony split. So we let them actually, so technically it'd be called a swarm, where we just let them do it naturally on themselves. I don't go up and take the colony, cut it in half and do that.
Right.
I let them do it. And they'll go up in the nearby apple trees. We've told some stories over the summer on that, where my son and I'll go out and kind of shake the brood ball into an empty beehive and catch it that way and start a new hive. But generally we just let them go out in the mountainside and just start the new colonies out there. And we've had some interesting stories on that, Kevin, where my neighbors we kind of stay incognito here and don't advertise what we are because we didn't want to have problems. Sometimes there's vandalism issues. I won't get into all that. But what I'm getting at here is the neighbors have lost some large old growth apple tree branches. Luckily, not the trees because our bees being brought into this area have just pollinated so much so well. Yeah, that they're talking. I can't believe it. There's apples. There's like double the apples of any other year. And I'm like, I'm sitting there smiling on. Yeah, well, I'm waiting to see where this is going to see if it's a good or bad thing. And of course, I live in the middle of the mountains. You may not know that. So
right.
I'm actually,
yeah.
Okay. So I'm deep in the Cascade Mountains. So we have deer everywhere. They'll just walk down the street. You know, you'll get your occasional bear. So we're feeding everybody in the mountains as they come out. So that's been kind of.
So you know the term first world problem? You know, people are like, oh, I can't decide on what color, you know, phone case to get. First world problem. Well, this with the apple tree just getting too heavy because it's being pollinated so well, this is a new world problem.
Oh, how funny. That's funny. And it wasn't just the apple trees. We have the neighbor's grapevines shot over with about a 6-foot section of fence for the whole property. And anyway, that section was completely buried with grapes and our, I think we call him I don't remember now, but now he's the Shungi moonshine guy because he would sneak in the middle of the night and nobody cared because the grapes would hang over the fence into the thick alleyway, public domain, no big deal. There's enjoy some grapes. So he'd come get his bag, take him out and make his, like I said, Shungay moonshine out in the mountains now, because he had such a plentiful harvest of grapes. Yeah. So we'll see if he, maybe it turns out too good and he'll forget to bring me a sample. But if he does, that would be interesting. Yeah. And then the apple wasn't really a problem with the apples, but it was kind of neat to see. And
I hope, maybe we'll get some, I hope you're going to share that moonshine.
We'll see if there's enough to go around. I don't know. Well, we'll see. Yeah, hopefully he comes by. That's funny. Even though, and again, the same with the bees, all the neighbors' gardens, because of course it's not just the trees. And we spoke to Nancy a little bit yesterday. We have a local artist who takes photos of our area and our town, because it is so just picturesque, I think you might term it, out here in the mountains and pretty. So we're going to try and go back a couple of years and seasons and see if possibly there's some photos of pre-Shungay beehives in the area at times, and maybe see if there's a difference in the color in the growth. It's, you know, it's one of those things that's, you know, we don't know until we see it, but we're going to take a look at that. We know at least here in the few blocks that we speak to the neighbors, there's no arguing that, because the plants are so big. Again, their branches are breaking and the grounds, it looks like it's been peppered with apples, because there'd be hundreds of apples under every tree. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun actually from that perspective.
And tell them, I mean, the thing of it is that, and this is kind of hard to grasp, but the quality of the fruit is so much more than it could, than before. You know, it's like I go to the grocery store and I'm eating stuff that I've eaten for years that just doesn't taste right, because there isn't enough active pollination within the orchards or the farms. And, you know, the reason the moonshine guy didn't use those grapes until they became Shungay grapes, they were too small and too not enough sugar. Correct, Derek?
Yep. See, Nancy's great at that. I leave half the stories out more than half the time. The grapes were really tiny things. Think half of the tip of your pinky. So I'm talking really small ones. You know, they're really pretty and neat to look at, but they were bird food, basically. And that's what the neighbors were telling me. And yeah, this time. And even my next door neighbor didn't know about at that point until the swarm started popping up in their yard, and we'd have to go over there and catch them. And then it was kind of hard to not talk about bees. But it all worked out well. But yeah, the grapes were not sweet enough, evidently good enough for birds, but not sweet enough to really get the sugars needed for the shine. So no, it's should be interesting.
So is that from like just the particles from the bees when they're rubbing on the nuggets on the entrance to the hives that it's going and rubbing off on the plants? And you know,
oh, well, there's, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. There's actually a lot of it. So it's a lot of it from just the abundant pollination is going to make a difference. But then also I do, and what you're kind of getting at there is the bees do, I put out little trays. So the little clear trays that you would put a silver dollar in if you were to keep it and save it somewhere and open it up like a little sandwich and pour powder in there. So the bees do not only get powder from the nuggets that are there year round that they continually walk over, and the nuggets continually get smaller from the bees wearing them down. As anyone who's listening has already probably held Shungay, they know that the black powder will get on your fingers and it'll basically continue to do that. It's a carbon. That's what happens. So the bees take advantage of that all year long, getting it on themselves. It adheres to them. And you can even see that happening when they walk through the powder itself. And the bees just kind of trot through and then take off and fly again, sort of taking their own little Shungay pendant with them as they leave. And that'll be left. It can't not be left, at least percentages of the Shungay they take with them in the local fields and gardens and neighborhoods and whatnot. So we're really kind of Shungaying the whole neighborhoods as well. And bees will travel up to 7 miles from their hive if necessary. So it's relative to each location. But yeah, they are taking Shungay out everywhere. And we've even stepped that up a little bit on some of our garden plants and other plants where we've taken the nuggets and actually, depending on the plant, say strapped a nugget to the stem and or maybe put powder in the water where we rinse our nuggets. We try and rinse it before they get sold on the store, because you don't want to, you know, have too much powder coming on you. So with that water, there's no sense in wasting it. So we'll give it to our plants and or garden if the dogs don't get to it first and try and drink it up. But Maureen has dumped the powder remnants in flowers on the, and we've taken photos of this sometime in the last couple of years, and they're online, showing the flower pots that were identical at the initial state, basically tripling in size and number of flowers in a very short amount of time using the powder. So I can see that definitely happening as well in all these gardens and the various blooming plants that the bees are visiting, because the shungite's getting out there. It's disappearing from the nuggets that have to, you know, we'll put more out there, and or in the bird bath, we have the nuggets and the powder, and it's all leaving. It's not staying there. So I know it's being dispersed, and then I'm seeing the results in the environment and or hearing from the people, even at the high school. Our whole town is only 5 blocks long or wide, however you want to look at it. It's kind of odd shaped. And so the high school is a couple blocks away, and they have gardening outside. They've seen a difference. And this is my first year hiking in this area, so I have nothing to compare myself in the mountainside, but as far as in town, it's been phenomenal. And the shungite's nice. Help, not just the bees, it's the mixture. Yeah, it was both. So anybody can do it. Even without bees, take their own shungite, be it powder, go out and use that, or nuggets, as we've recommended, and do their own in their own garden.
I want to jump in here for a little science lesson here, because people who may be new to this show are going like, what, a little chip of powder can do this? The key to what we're talking about is that shungite connects to the quantum field. And when we started working with it, we realized that in the case of shungite, and we're talking an energy universe, we're just talking energy here, when you have the powder is more energetic than a 5-pound brick. And so when they take a little piece of powder and they put it someplace, even though it's just a fleck of powder, the field that it radiates is still going out for feet, not inches, feet. So it is truly a miraculous kind of thing. We call it infinite power in a finite object, and that's exactly what it is. So, yeah, those little bees are flying around. All they need is one little chip, and they're protected. They leave that, and now that plant is protected and nourished by the quantum field energy. So all that you're seeing is really opening up to the 90% of existence, which is the quantum field. And the more we learn about it, the more magical it becomes. Go ahead.
No, that's a great point. I'm glad you pointed that out. And I have yet to find a type of animal that doesn't like it, that isn't drawn to it. We've got shungite nuggets in our birds' water, our, of course, dog and cat. We've had it in fish bowls. There's even a little, I don't know what he is. He looks like a little lion. He stands, it's a dog. I go to various shows here in the Northwest on the weekends, and there's another person, a vendor that goes there, and he has a little tiny, looks like maybe a chihuahua type thing. And that little guy can't even get up on the table, and he'll try and jump up in the air to get to the shungite at the table that we have. So it's really fascinating to see how the response is on animals and insects. Another thing, Kevin, is this year I did it last year in the bird/bee baths. So we put shungite nuggets in the bee baths out in our yard, because of course bees need a source of water as well. And that's a way I should mention to people, if you want to draw bees to your area in your garden or whatnot, give them a source of water, because they're continually looking for that. And the least distance they have to go, the better. So, and they'll remember. And of course they'll do their little wiggle dance and tell their girlfriends back at the hive where the water is. And then you'll start to get bees coming in your area. So you don't have to have your own beehive or anything like that. And then when you put the shungite nuggets in the water, again, we have video of this where the hornets and wasps will drink side by side the shungite bees. So think like that. A lot of us grew up watching those Serengeti photos where maybe the lions and tigers are eating right next to a gazelle and they should be eating. It's that type of deal. And I'm just sitting there smiling with my camera recording it, because these wasps and hornets and the ones in this area, and I think really all of them, are meat eaters. They actually, they'll eat bees, and that's what they do. So when they attack a hive, they'll take the bees away and eat them. They're not necessarily going for the honey. So it's really fun to watch them just sit there and at the bee watering hole and now the wasp watering hole, and everyone get along. So that's kind of fascinating. And that video is all online as well. in the forums and the various Facebook groups if someone was interested.
Very cool.
Yeah, and so it has a nice calming, you know, healing effect on all of nature, plants, animals, insects, humans. It's fascinating. It's been a lot of fun, and I think the ride's just begun because, again, hearing people like you using it in so many other ways, and then we get more into the metaphysical as well, it's just mind-blowing. It's a lot of fun.
So, go ahead, Kevin.
I was just saying, like, when I'm working at the Renaissance festivals, whenever I find somebody that's into stones and crystals and minerals, I go and or that's into bees, because occasionally you have somebody who's like, bee is their totem. That's what they're really identifying with. And so I say, hey, have you heard about the shungite bees and like colony collapse disorder has been conquered? They're like, no. It's like, of course you haven't, but check out this place. And I've been sending your way.
That's great. That's exactly how we're all going to help each other. It's a team effort. And the more we all do it and talk and spread, and yeah, I'm willing to talk to any beekeeper anywhere on the planet and teach them for free how to do it. It's all of us. So that's great. I appreciate that very much. Did you have a question, Nancy?
No, I want to get into the mirror thing, because I just looked at the time and we've got 4 minutes to the top of the hour. So have we sort of said what we wanted to say about the bees?
Yeah, I can go. I'm sorry about that.
You can stay if you want to participate in the conversation, but I really want him to explain. And he's also got a couple of other things that he wanted to cover. Up to you whether you want to stay or not. But let's just right now, because we're only four minutes out, we'll play a tune and then we'll, you know, figure out where to go from there. Does that sound right?
Perfect.
Awesome.
Okay, then. Of course, I've got to now figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay, I'm going to do Imagine Dragons Thunder.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder, thunder, thunder.
Thunder,
thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder,
thunder, feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, thunder, feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 thunder.
Kids were laughing in my classes while I was scheming for the masses. Who do you think you are? Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping in the nosebleeds.
Thunder, 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 thunder,
thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder,
thunder,
thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder, thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder, thunder. Feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder, lightning and the thunder, 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 feel the thunder.
Thunder, 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 thun
And welcome back to the Shungite Show. It is December 11th, 2018. My name's Nancy Hopkins. With me is Kevin Smith and Derek Condit. And we're talking, we talked bees. And now I'm going to kind of turn it over to Kevin because he has a list of things that he would like to share with us. So, Kevin, you got your list in front of you because it's not up on there.
Yeah, I gotta go to that other conversation. Hello?
Yes. Go to the other conversation for your man. Yeah. What he did was when we first set up, he put a list of things he wanted to talk about. But when we brought Derek in, we lost our Skype messaging. Now we got a blank slate here. So he's gonna go pull that one up, and then he'll know what his list is.
Right. So the first was just talking about the Shungite meter and how things have developed with that. And, you know, I've been doing the scrying with it on the regular and just what, my experience with that. So,
okay, before we begin, because most people wouldn't understand the word scrying or what you're doing with a black mirror. They may have seen it in a movie or something, but this is just a fascinating way to connect with your own internal messaging, in my opinion. You know, I mean, it's just bringing, okay, but you talk about it.
Okay, so it's more of a, you think of it in like the Disney format where it's just kind of the facsimile of the idea is go to Snow White and, you know, the evil stepmom queen, the evil queen, and she looks in her magic mirror on the wall and you know, she calls forth her daemon who goes and tells her truths and says, nope, you're not the most beautiful anymore. Sorry. You know, stuff like that. You know, that's kind of just a facsimile of the art and the idea. Scrying is using any kind of reflective surface. So a crystal ball, a mirror, a bowl of water. And then, you know, even beyond that, yeah, like nature scrying, where people see the images in clouds, and finding pictures in clouds is really the most basic form that, you know, children do even. And it's somewhat related to the whole concept of reading tea leaves and all of that. But the scrying in particular is looking into a reflective surface and allowing the images or visions or messages or impressions to speak from that. And Nancy and you and I were talking beforehand about a couple of mechanisms that are used or that happen when doing the scrying and why it works as a thing. And do you want to go into that or?
Oh, yes, because on the promo that's up in chat and on Cosmic Reality Facebook, you're going to see two images. And those two images are in a video. I posted the video there too for you. But it was so weird because if you stare at the one that's got the green dot with the white dots on the side of it, very quickly in my experience, all I could see was the green dot. The other ones had disappeared. Now, the guy's not manipulating the imaging. It's what's happening in the eye because, and Kevin probably explained this better, but our eyes are, the brain starts to focus on what the eye is focusing on. And so to limit the amount of data coming in, it sort of like disengages from what's happening on the outside. And so these things disappear. There's another picture of these, pink kind of like circles around a plus in the sign in the middle of it, and again those pink things started disappearing. If you moved your eyes, you could see them again, and that to me was just such a demonstration of what I had heard Kevin trying to explain before as to what happens when you're staring into the reflection. Because as you're staring into the reflection, well, into the mirror, because you don't want it to be reflective, is that correct? You want to be able to see just the black mirror, is that correct?
I mean, it is somewhat reflective, but that's also why, you know, that's why you go and had the tradition of doing a scrying in the light of the full moon. And that has its own effects that I will get into later. But or any kind of dusky, not real bright, you don't want the sunlight shining on it and all that. But I mean, you know, I'm sitting here in the kitchen and, you know, I've got a white refrigerator showing behind me and I'm doing the scry as I'm talking and I can still get that that Troxler's fading, which is the phenomenon of, you know, something that you stare at goes in the eye or the brain will go and filter out the repetitive signal so that you can, you know, look for things that change kind of thing.
Okay, so then the second part of it, the second aspect that's happening in the brain facilitating this, because see, everybody thinks this is it's not magic, it's energy, and it's the way that the brain interacts with energy, and that's what I love about Kevin is that he goes at it as a science. So what you've got when it's what did they call it the prisoner something
the
or
prisoner,
other
the prisoner's cinema.
Yeah, explain that to the people.
Okay, so this arose from, I mean, it's an unfortunate label, terminology for it, but it's when you had prisoners that were kept in solitary confinement or kept in dark conditions where they weren't allowed to have light, they couldn't see the passing of time, they didn't know what day it was, they didn't know if it was day or night or whatever, then... You start to get visions. And this is really what's due to what's called phosphenes. It's like if you go and rub your eyes too hard, you know how you'll see little flashes of light and color. That's going on all the time. The reason we are aware of it when we rub our eyes is because that goes and overstimulates phosphine emission. But the phosphenes are present in the eye, in the mind. I mean, everything at all times. But like, you know, when you're going to sleep and you see the little images on the back of your eyes as you're starting to go to sleep and, you know, and then that leads quite naturally into dreamscape and all of that. But also like in, certain ceremonies where you go and, stay in a lodge. Like Native American sweat lodge, and it's dark, and you got the glow of the rocks in the center of the lodge, and you know the medicine man goes and pours water on that and makes it really hot and steamy, but it's so dark, and you don't have any, you have this one little point of focus in the center of the lodge, but then the rest of it just fades out, and you get to watch the watch the spirits dance, you know, watch the phosphine simulation. And, you know, with the context and the setting of that, you can get lots of really deep, profound messages and feel connected and all of that. And that's one of the things that, you know, causes going into a sweat lodge in ceremony to have such an impact for people. But there, you know, this happens a lot of times in a lot of different places. And then with the scrying mirror, you have the Troxler's fading because you're going and holding a certain point of focus, and the mind will go and then blot out the surface of the mirror, and sometimes even beyond that, peripheral vision goes and shrinks, and then it is just the frame of the mirror and this, you know, void that has arisen. And then when you have that, it turns into the cinema of the subconscious and the mind then seeing all the different little patterns. And particularly if you have an intention and you have your focus and awareness that you're directing that, then the phosphenes and such can go and start to react in a way that is meaningful to your original intent. And sometimes it gets a little crazy from that and you go off track and you realize things that you didn't even know.
Okay, couple questions. How long have you been doing this? And how did you go about creating an S4 Black Mirror?
So I have been doing different forms of scrying for ever since I was a child. I used to do, you know, my mom relays the story of when I was a little kid, and, you know, she'd put on a movie so that she could go make dinner or whatever. And the screen would go, you know, get to the end, the credits would roll, and you get to the very end, and it's an old VHS, and you get to the end of the VHS film, and it goes static on screen. You know, you remember this, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So she would walk in, and I would just be sitting there watching the static on the screen. And, you know, it would be 15 minutes after the credits had finished and it was just being static. And I'm just sitting there looking at the screen. And she says, "What are you doing?" And you say, I would say, "I'm watching the snow." And she like, "What?" I was like, "I'm watching the snow." She's like, "Well, I'm going to turn it off." I'm like, "Well, okay, but I'm watching the snow, you see." So I've been doing that kind of tendency ever since I was a child, and I've done in lots of different...
Don't you wish that you could remember what that child was really seeing?
Well, sometimes I do, but usually in dreams. But yeah, so now with the Black Mirror, I've only been using the Black Mirror as the speculum, as the surface that I'm, you know, doing the scrying in. I've only been utilizing the Black Mirror for a couple of years now. And then, you know, from just after the last conversation that we had over the summer, where I got some S4 powder and made the S4 peculum. I want to mash that up, the S4 powder and speculum, but I don't even know how to pronounce that. And that whole practice has, I would say it's gone 3D, but it's not just 3D, you know?
Okay, first off, let's just talk about how you make these things, because that to me is part of the interest in it. It's how do you go about making one of these things?
Okay, so for making a regular Black Mirror, it's taking a picture frame, just the clear glass, and you take the glass out and you set it off onto a cardboard, you know, backdrop someplace that can catch the excess that drips and whatnot. And you just paint it with black paint and then wait for it to dry, hold it up to the sun to see the little bits of light that shine through, and go and put on another layer of paint. And, you know, sometimes it takes 3 or 4 layers of paint in order to go and get the full total occlusion of light where it's not showing anything through. And then wait for it to dry, put it back in the frame, but with the paint on the inside of the frame so that it's a clear, smooth glass on the, you know, facing you. And that's your regular Black Mirror. Now, what I have done with the S4 powder is, you know, I've gotten the packet of powder of the S4, the B powder, as, you know, they call it, as y'all call it. But I went and took a little bit of black latex paint and added some water, and I water that down, and then I add the black powder to that mix so that it makes a rich black paste. And, you know, maybe add another little squirt of black paint in it to make it a little more solidly black. And then I use that to paint the mirror instead of just regular latex paint. Now, with this mirror that I have here, what I did is I had a dear friend who gifted me a convex mirror or a convex picture frame. And it's called bubble glass. And it's an old style of glass that used to be done, but you don't really find it anymore anywhere, where the surface of the glass, instead of being flat, is actually curved out. So it looks like a little bubble almost for the, you know, entire surface of the area of the glass. And so that's the one that I went and made the shungite mirror out of, was with that bubble glass.
Now, and you didn't have any problems painting it out or anything like that. It just went on like smooth, no problems, and then you just turned it around and boom, you've got a black mirror. This shungite.
Boom, you got a black mirror, yep.
Okay.
And,
so,
and standard, you know, when making a black mirror, depending on one's own metaphysical inclination, is people will go and put a sigil, either a previously set sigil, so if they have whatever angel or daemon, you know, not like evil demon, but in the old Greek sense of the daemon being the inspiration, the muse, and take that sigil and you paint it on the cardboard or the particle board, whatever the backing is for the mirror, for the frame, going in and painting that sigil on. And so I have also done that just because why not?
Okay, so that, so now explain what happened when you started to use the S4 versus the typical black mirror.
Okay, so with the typical black mirror, well, we're talking about the Troxler fading, where you go and your field of vision just blanks out because you have the same signal of that's coming in through the eyes. With a regular black mirror, I found that would be going in a bits here and there. And then, you know, when something starts to fade, well, then the eye is naturally drawn towards that, even ever slow slightly, and it would make it kind of disappear for, you know, diminish for a bit. And then, you know, when you go and pull your, you know, center of focus back, then it'll come back. And but it wasn't very uniform in that process. And it would take a while. And with the S4 mirror, what I have found is that it takes a few seconds of going and holding your point of focus. And then that fade just whoosh kind of comes. And it's not scary, but it is very pronounced and very insistent. Like now you have that void screen, and then going and watching the phosphenes and the little geometric shapes and images and impressions and all of that, the whole quality of that is drastically different. With regular black mirror, I find that it's the more crazy, chaotic, because, you know, we all have thoughts that go and jump around and bounce around in our heads. And, you know, even when we go and get a certain, you know, a particular point of focus, well, we've got all these other thoughts that are kind of sitting off in the sideline, up, you know, off in the wings, waiting to come in. And there, you know, when you don't have some other thought that's calling your attention, well, then these other random thoughts will kind of come in and try and insist on their own importance, because they're like, hey, it's my time. And then that's represented visually with the prisoner cinema being somewhat chaotic, particularly at the beginning of a scrying session. With this S4 mirror, the prisoner cinema, the visualization that occurs is much more geometric. It's congruent. It makes sense. It's all related to itself. And the way that I usually experience this is the concept. I mean, you know, I'm trying to interpret things into words, which is always going to be difficult, but a portal or a tunnel, I feel that I am being held in place. You know, I don't have that tendency to get distracted and have the eyes move as much. But then the visually, it's represented almost like a tunnel where it forms this web tunnel of light. And there's the perception of motion, of movement. And that movement is of being held in place in the scrying there. It's not drifting. It's not just being blown around, but it's being held fairly securely. And the sensation of being pulled and or falling into. And so, I've done a lot of contemplation on this, and it's like, I don't know if this is the quantum field, but I've work as far as manifestation, pulling forward ideas, trying to make other contacts.
Okay, now when you're, because it would make sense that you're look. I would think it's sort of like, who knows? All of a sudden I had three different stories go through my head
right.
as to what could be possible. It's fascinating. So when you're in, you get the geometric figures. Now, are these figures, dimensional in that you see depth to them? They look 3D to you?
More so with the S4 mirror than a regular black mirror.
Okay. And do you have spirits that come to you, or a spirit that works with you in the mirror, through the mirror?
That's a question that I've asked myself on that. One of the things that I've, as far as my own practice, is going and getting that tunnel, the blackness, the geometric form turns into tunnel, that feeling of being pulled, and then start talking. And, looking in the mirror and talking, you're creating a little bit of motion. So the effect, it's not totally ruining the Trochler's fading, but it's overlaid with the shape of my face and mouth moving and all of that, but it's not me. And so then if I'm wanting to go and, talk and have a dialogue, I'll go and have a dialogue with this character who, anybody looking at me would say that I'm just talking to myself in a mirror, but experientially, subjectively, I'm experiencing it as a different individual. And that's one of the notes that I had made was for David Kaloff with the mirror self-hypnosis that he does. And he had this thing where he would just go look in a regular mirror. And I think it was from, he had it, the idea from a Rudyard Kipling thing where this character would go and stare in a mirror and just say, Ben, I am Ben. Ben, I am Ben. And they would just go and continuously do that until it became a mantra and lost all meaning and got weird and all that. And so what David Kaloff has done is when he's doing it, he would just ask the reflection and say, who am I? Who am I? And then get into that weird trancey headspace and do self-hypnosis there. And that's similar to what I have done in my practice when I'm going and encountering this this bizarre figure that's me yet not me, is to go and tell it things of, my own shadow self. And it tells me, and it's Shungite, it goes and it translates things, it changes the spin and the rotation, and it changes it so that, like, the negative, the shadowy part of me, it's like, yes, that is within you. However, and then it goes and lays all the positive aspect, or the positive that comes because of what I, and otherwise would perceive as a negative aspect within myself. And so I'm doing self-hypnosis, self-counseling with this character in the mirror who is myself, yet not myself.
Let me tell you, one day, and this was, I think, pre-Shungite. It was the morning. I walked into the bathroom, and as you walk you turn the corner and you walk into the door, the mirror is right there. And when I looked into the mirror, there was a different version of myself there. Instead of white hair, it was dyed brown hair. She was all dressed up, makeup and all that. You'd never see makeup on me, you know. I just stood there staring at her. But the weirdest thing was that I realized that she could see me too.
Right.
And there was a telepathic connection between the two of us that created an understanding of who she was regarding me. Yes, she's another version of myself on another timeline. But on that timeline, she's rich, successful, married, all the things that you're supposed to want, right? And here I am, single, you know, just getting by, you know, nobody knows who the hell I am. And yet her reaction was one of jealousy.
Ah.
And as soon as that transaction happened, then poof, gone. But I know that was real. So now you're
right.
Telling me that, yes, it's a known thing. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wild. And I have found it to be very helpful and beneficial to me in my life, as far as just way of going about the world and going about life.
Well,
doing this as regular practice.
My feeling is that, you know, you learn, you see, you think, and then you get, oh, could it be that? Is that, I had a friend of mine who was telling me about being at an event, and he suddenly felt this energy going through his body, hitting the person in front of him. And he felt as if it was not meant for him, that he was like a conduit, you know? So I'm a remote viewer, and I can go back in time. So I go back in time, and what I see is that the spirit guide, if you want to think of it that way, of this individual was the one that was trying to get this energy through. And because my friend was, very open conduit for energies, it just passed right through him. But when I was watching it, I was struck with the thought that is this spirit that is actually interjecting an enormous amount of energy into this, through this person, into the person in front of him, is this his higher self or is this his future self?
Right.
Do you get a feeling of time element or just version of yourself?
I would say I get it more of the version of myself. However, there is some of the future pacing where I ask myself or ask the reflection and I say, what does it feel like to, and then I go and put all the conditions of the future that I'm working toward manifesting. And then the reflection responds back to me and then I feel it and I can know it. I can sense it, as opposed to an abstract rational thing. I get that body knowledge of that, what it feels like and what that experience is of being that.
And did it feel good?
Yeah. I mean, I keep doing it.
Oh, wow. What do you think is the difference? Why is shungite making that kind of a difference? Just because it's shungite and working with a quantum field, that it's setting up an energy field? That, remember, that little molecule that's inside of it, the fullerene. And I try to stress to people, you only need one of these things. In the case of shungite, you don't even need that because of the quantum entanglement of every single piece of shungite.
But, right, right.
But it's rotating, the fullerene is, C60 fullerene, is rotating at 20 billion times a second.
Mm-hmm.
20 billion, I don't know who counted. But the thing of it is the only way you could possibly conceive of getting that kind of energy at the 3D is that it's being fed by that quantum field. So it's setting up, like shungite can attenuate toxin molecules. It can attenuate radio signals that are dangerous to us. At the same time, I think that when you put it in that scribing mirror, you're creating another energy field. In other words, we're using the basic, let's say, systems of the human brain to create an environment of receptability, accepting what's happening. A lot of people would do that and never see anything, even though it might have been happening.
Right.
And that if you put yourself into this concept of not only are you giving permission, but you're entering a field of quantum proto-energy.
Yeah, and so there's a gentleman, a professor in the UK called Rupert Sheldrake, and he's not the first one to pioneer this idea, but he's kind of the modern front runner of the idea. Is instead of the idea that the brain creates consciousness, that the brain and the body serve as a consciousness antenna, and that consciousness actually exists outside of us, you know, in the same way that the radio is not creating the actual radio program, and the computer that people watch to see this program is not what's creating this program. It's just your computer happens to be a really complex, basically antenna, which is going and channeling this program. And in the same way, Rupert Sheldrake is talking about how the brain and the mind is existing outside of just the physical structure. And of course, it can be affected by it. So like if you cut out part of someone's brain, well, that's really going to affect their reception of the personality. But that does not mean that the brain is causing the personality, the personhood, the entity that is you. And so with the shungite mirror, I feel like it's just kind of a modular add-on to the antenna that is you, so that, and like you were talking about with the molecular spin and all of that, is that it's going and transmuting the signal. And so I think that's a bit of the whole impressions that are received in the mirror, is that I am focusing and getting a more narrow channel of consciousness, and wherever my consciousness is in this whole equation, like that's still up for debate, right? But that by going and putting the visual mirror with the S4 shungite powder, that it's basically creating it as a folk technology to go and attenuate the signal of consciousness and really reality.
Now, when you're looking into this tunnel, okay, do you feel like you could actually out of body go through it? Or maybe with body go through it? Does it feel like a transport potential?
It feels like that, and I do have some dear friends that I am working on with that, where they have granted me permission to contact them through the mirror, and as far as going and just getting the action at a distance, as it were, and still, just gotten that fairly recently. So still working on that, still have reports to come back and report on that whole endeavor.
Okay, maybe we ought to do this off air because I could just, everybody's going to be out there making these black mirrors with shungite S4, which you can get on cosmicreality.net. He's talking about the shungite B powder. We're making it available to people, but that's where you have to get it. Go to the store, go to the B's and you'll find it there. But they'll be making this so that they can go and, hopefully, looking on their children on the other side, talk about an increase in stalking.
Right. transcendental stalking.
Oh my God. Who knows? Yeah.
But you know, similarly, like, you know, with your pendants that you're doing, like, you can't do anything negative.
Oh, thank you for reminding me.
You can't go and curse them and use the power of Shungite to wreck someone's life or make them go crazy or anything like that. I mean, the Shungite Smackdown is going to do a little bit of that on its own, but there's nothing evil that can be done with the Shungite.
No, it won't turn on. It'll just go dormant.
And so I feel that that whole principle and concept is also applying in the mirror, that if you do not have pure intention, then the mirror is just going to show you a little, you know, maybe it'll still show you a light show, just because, you know, psychologically, biologically, you know, you look into a black mirror and you're going to see whatever your own brain projects. But as far as having anything having anything that
enlightened experience.
Yeah, having enlightened experience. That's just not gonna go. It'll just kind of turn off and let the physics of a black pane of glass do its regular thing that it would do anyways. But it's not gonna go and give you any visionary thing.
It just sounds delightful. When you're doing it, what do you ever get, like, you know, I mean, what kind of emotions or feelings? My body acts like I was telling somebody that, you know, when I'm doing the wrapping a pendant, you have to know which way the energy's flowing, and the way I know is my stomach. And I think it was a mutual training that my stomach would be the indicator. And so if I turn it one way and I feel fine and turn it the other way and feel nauseous, well, I know not to wrap it so the nauseous is down, you know. And right. Do you get those? Are you tuned? I think you already said that you could physically feel. So you actually have physical stimulation from your interaction with the mirror.
Oh, yeah. So you get the whole, because Shungite's so grounding. So I don't feel sucked into the mirror as far as, like, just being, you know, oh, Kevin's gone and not gonna, you know, where is he? Oh, he's off in the cosmos. Well, no, like, it's very grounded experience still. So even though I feel that pull and that tension that's going and drawing in, I still feel grounded and aware of position on Earth, you know, on Gaia, as it were. So, but as far as, like, the emotional and physical experience of it, it's very much calming. It's very meditative. And some, you know, doing the scry, it's not always with the intention of finding something or learning something or all that. It can also just be a point of focus and just do it as a meditation. And that kind of dovetails into what another thing I was wanting to talk about was the Wim Hof breathing method.
Yes, please.
And using that in relation to the mirror. So Wim Hof is a gentleman from the Netherlands who his moniker is the Iceman, and he holds like just shy of 30 world records for, you know, being buried in ice and the amount of distance that he can swim under ice water. And, you know, He went and he ran a marathon, the length of a marathon, in Finland, north of the Arctic Circle, in winter, wearing a pair of running shoes and a pair of shorts. And just like that, just did it fine. He's climbed Mount Everest. He's climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, you know, likewise clad. You know, teaches this method as well. I mean, you can find his app in the Google App Store where he goes and gives, it's very a basic technique.
Can you spell his last name? What's
So it's Wim Hof. So it's W-I-M. Hof is H-O-F or H-O-F-F. it's Dutch, so I'm not familiar with the naming scheme.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so, but his breathing technique has been used by hundreds and thousands now at this point of people, because what he does is he goes and basically hacks his own autonomic nervous system. And based on the timing that you go and hold your breath back, it's a controlled hyperventilation, and then you either wait with lungs that are mostly empty or lungs that are completely full. And that will, depending on which one you do, you're going to be accessing your sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system. And one is going to cause the anxiety response. And so that way you're going and training to be calm, even in severe stress. And then if you do it on the empty, then it's just going and causing that relaxation and calm response. But I've been incorporating that into doing the mirror as well.
Are you familiar with gamma breathing?
Gamma, it kind of rings a bell, but...
Okay, gamma breathing was presented by a young woman, Norcross, was it? What is her name? Oh, gosh. I know because I actually have a clip of her doing it. I'll think of it. I'll put it on the YouTube description. But it is an amazing way of going into, and they've done readings, measurements of the brainwaves, okay? And you go into gamma brainwave. And it's so simple. It's simply a repetitive breathing through your nose and out your nose, and then same thing with the mouth. And it doesn't take you very long before your brain syncs with the breathing and goes into a gamma state. And when she was demonstrating this and I saw how fast it happened, I thought, oh my God, this is an incredibly important secret that you can put your brain into a gamma state just by breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out of the nose, and then repetitive of the mouth, you know, and breath. The breath is the key to it all. So this is fascinating. I just can't imagine somebody running around in their underwear in that. I mean, it's 60 degrees here and I've got, winter clothes on.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a really fantastic methodology. And I've done a little bit of the cold exposure, not quite so extreme, I have to say. But mostly with the breathing techniques, I take a half hour in the morning and a half hour at night, and I do a series of the breathing exercises, and it's phenomenal. And then when I'm doing those, I have the shungite nugget of, and I use the Elite Noble shungite, so it doesn't leave marks on my head from the carbon coming off. But I'll go in and lay that on my forehead and lay down in my bed while I'm doing this. And then, I mean, we could do a whole nother show on that.
just a shungite note on the Elite reference. We don't use Elite. Well, we put some of it in the honey. Because the frequency of the Elite is not as compatible with the 3D as is the raw pendant. The frequency field of the raw pendant works more on a physical level, whereas the Elite should be used exactly how he's using it for meditative purposes. Yes, it's healing, but it's not, in my opinion, this is all my reading, my energetic reading of things. If you're really looking to balance yourself out, and I suggest you do that before you try any of the higher stuff, then it's the raw, and we don't sell the Elite for this very reason. However, we do have a new thing. It's under the advanced shungite devices, because it's S4 shungite, but it's been tumbled with actually 99% silver pieces in there, and it's tumbled for 3 days. And at the end of the 3 days, the rocks are coated with the silver. But it was funny because, it actually takes another, at least 3 days for that silver to, migrate into the depth of the shungite. It's very interesting to see. But, that particular frequency is one where, again, don't even think about trying this. We have pendants up there. They're expensive. It's an expensive process. You're using a lot of silver. But don't even think about doing this unless you are an advanced energy worker, because you will not have access to the what I'm about to tell you. If you've got the pendant, it's going to protect you from the EMF and the Wi-Fi, and you know it's going to do all the good things that they normally do. But in this case, what happens is that we have a bioelectromagnetic field that is the blueprint, the etheric, I call it the etheric blueprint for the physical body. And if you want to question me on that, or you want to know more about it, read Vibrational Medicine by Dr. Richard Gerber. He spells it out in a huge textbook. But this concept of this bioelectromagnetic field is referencing the interaction of the physical body with your energetic, magnetic, electric fields that are your etheric blueprint. When you interface with the shungite, we call it a cosmic saturated, silver saturated shungite. When you interact with that, what happens is that you are suddenly linked to multidimensional versions of yourself. Because that's what I think we see when we do scrying, maybe. It's the multidimensional. Yeah. Because we're not just this 3D person. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Dave Corso, who is a the man who started the first radio station that we started with, he died, but he didn't go on. He decided not to decide where to go except to stay and work directly with us. So he shows up all the time. And the other day, Dolly and I were on radio, and Dave was standing in front of Dolly, and he was standing right behind me. Because he's not limited by the 3D limitation of a 3D body and the fixation and focus we have on it. So what I'm saying here is that there are more and more tools being given to us to access this new concept of our own being. That we've got the 3D version of ourselves, but we've got multidimensional versions of ourselves. The girl that I saw in the mirror, you know,
right.
your own future self. I mean, many, many times I have had conversations, but learning from past selves of mine. You know, remote viewing is only accessing, it's like having a radio that can tune to other frequencies. And so you go back and you look at that's always there. You go back, you look at it, and you go, wow. You know, so, but I've learned things from interacting with past personalities. You know, understanding historical things that you can't get if you haven't been there. You know, I've seen things in these things that I didn't know in the 3D, only to find out. Like, for instance, I found out that the Roman armies were using dogs in one of these past life look-ats. I'm going, what is this dog thing? And then years later, somebody was explaining how dogs were used by the Roman army. So actually nothing is limited to us. And I'm just so tickled with this mirror concept because, wow, how long have you been doing it with the S-Force mirror?
So let's see, I did that right after our last, I guess, maybe a month after our last conversation. So let's see, October, September, August. So since August.
That's all. Wow.
Yeah.
So you're just beginning to understand it.
Right.
Have you shared it with anybody else? Has anybody else made one or using it?
I have shown others. I've actually used this with clients because I do the hypnotherapy. And so I've done facilitated scrying where I have had my clients go and lead them into trance, and then have them go and observe the screen of the mirror of the S4 interface. And it's been very impactful.
Can you elaborate?
let's see, as long as I'm not saying names and stuff. So I had the one client who I talked about previously, where their younger brother had been killed tragically, suddenly and unexpectedly. And then their own channeling connection got cut off from their contact on the other side and the other dimensions. And so we went in the Black Mirror, went, and she was able to go and reestablish connection with her sources, and has been able to do the channeling again, but also has made contact with her brother, who has not yet gone, as it were, like you were talking about with your friend. Yeah, he's passed over, but he's still here, kind of thing. And she felt him give her a hug. Like, she experienced him, like, eyes open, wide awake, had that experience that I did not see or experience, but I got to facilitate her as she was doing this process. And so that's one of the instances there. And then any kind of, I've done it a couple other times with clients who have experienced tragic traumas of police brutality and rape, and going back, and we have this timeline therapy in hypnotherapy where you're going and observing a past trauma that is known and all of that, but then instead of experiencing it in your own head, you know, usually we say, look at it like you're looking at a movie screen in your head, right? And that way you get some separation, but actually having them observe that in the Shungite mirror, where they have even more of a place of protection and more distance from that event, so that they actually get resolution and healing for, you know, for that whole scenario and that whole instance that happened, or series of instances.
Wow. You know, it's, I get so many questions when you're talking, because it's just such a fascinating subject and what you're doing, pioneering this. And please, can you tell people how they can contact you if you want to, you know, because of your therapy capabilities, I'm assuming you can do it over Skype, or at least they'll know, you know, how to find your schedule to meet up with you maybe.
Yes, let me look that up real quick, because I made a bit link, because the actual online business card is just annoying web address. So I made a bit link. So let's see, bit.ly.
Now they can also find you on Facebook under Kevin Smith. I'm a friend of yours, so I don't know what else would they put in there to make sure it was you.
All right. Well, I mean, if you see that we have friends in common, and like, hey, there's Nancy is in, you know, friend in common. Well, then that's one way. But also, if you go to bit.ly/scholarlychangeworks.
Could you repeat that, please?
Yeah. So it is a bit link. So it starts bit.ly/scholarlychangeworks, all one word.
Scholarly change words.
Change works.
Oh, scholarly change works. Okay, we'll have the links up, so you know.
Yeah, for sure, and I'll shoot that link over to you.
Yes, and I'll put the Facebook link up too. Because, well, first off, he does these videos on the, and you can find him on the Shungite Reality Facebook group. He goes there and he puts up videos on what he's thinking or doing. Sometimes, but he does on his own. He does live shots at night in the tent.
Right.
With the cat.
Yeah, you were saying that you were having issues watching that one.
Oh, my God. Well, what happened was that it was late at night. I said to myself, don't go to Facebook. You'll be up, you know. I mean, because sometimes I get captured by people, you know, all of a sudden they're doing things. Oh, no, just let me see. And so I opened it up, and apparently the first part of the video had started playing before I even looked at it. And so when I looked at it, I was looking right into the Shungite S4 mirror. And oh, I got such a, I mean, like I say, my body tells me when we're getting into a lot of energy. And I was like, you know, slumped over. I was like, what the heck? Oh my God. And, you know, and I had to, 20 seconds was all that thing was on. And I'm like, I said, I turned off everything. I wasn't going to go any further. And by the time I tried to get up and go into the bedroom, I was virtually stumbling. You know, wow. Oh my. So then the next day I tried the same, you know, tried it, same reaction. But today I said, look it, I have got to be on with Kevin. So we're going to look at this thing, you know, and this time it didn't, I didn't have that effect. So,
good.
It was, well, I've also been wearing, you know, the cosmic silver saturated stuff. It's very interesting. That's all I'm going to say. I could tell you more about it, but it's just very interesting. So is there anything else? We blew through those 2 hours so fast, Kevin.
Right. I would say for people that are interested in this and some of what you were talking about as well, like the blueprint of the human and stuff, is to look up Rupert Sheldrake and his concept of morphogenetic fields, and Dr. Gary Schwartz, PhD. And I mean, you type in either of those and they show up right at the top of your Google search. Because, yeah, there's a lot of good info there.
Well, I so appreciate you being in my life. It's just, first off, you're the Renaissance man. I mean, I've always had this love of the Renaissance. Well, that time period was amazing. You know, they call it the Dark Ages that just preceded this. And mm-hmm. I got captivated by the concept of the Black, you know, the Dark Ages. And so I did all this research into it when I was in college and found out it wasn't dark at all. There was a tremendous amount of activity going on.
Right.
And it just fed into this, you know, the Renaissance. It was the changes in the society. They must have gone through an energy field or something, because the changes in the society was astounding. Many of them were, you know, crazy people trying to do alchemy and, you know, right. Rosicrucians and Knights Templars, and I mean, it just goes on and on. An era of magic.
Right. Well, Nancy, I appreciate you as well and everything that you're doing and spreading good messages, good energy, and bring stuff from the quantum field into our three-dimensional reality. So thank you for that.
Not a problem whatsoever. I just love it. It's my job. It's my mission. One thing I do want to say is that on the 12th, the GoFundMe donation thing, we're trying to, some people got interested in what was happening and they started this GoFundMe. On the 12th, tomorrow, it'll be over with. You can find a direct link into the Indiegogo website on cosmicreality.com, this radio station on the homepage, or you can go over to cosmicreality.net, and virtually there's links all over the place on that one. And Derek is trying to message me for some reason. He doesn't seem to know that I'm on radio. Dot. I don't know. He had an issue with the signal, so that's why he left us. But Kevin, you want to say anything to our audience?
I don't know. I've been saying a lot of things.
Yes, you have. You've shared so much, and it's been such a delight. It truly has.
And we'll have to follow up some of these threads and see how it goes in the future. And I do want to go and fill in with people. And if anybody wants to go and join in that whole concept of forming connection and all of that through the Shungite mirror, then go ahead and contact me. My link will be in the show notes whenever it's on YouTube. So,
and we'll also have the link for the water people. The people that are going out and doing ceremonies for the water.
Oh, yes. Awesome.
Okay. So, everybody, be safe. Be blessed. Kevin, let's do this more often, please. Anytime you want. All right?
All right.
Okay. Appreciate you. Have a good one. You too, hon. Be safe. You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Haggishack Radio.